everyone, and welcome back to Cinema Gems. And as always, I'm your host, the Admirable Admiral. And as always, we are at a video store somewhere in your hometown, so come find us. Yes, video stores still exist. And you're probably wondering, wait, we? What do you mean we? It's just you talking. Of course, it's just me talking. And of course, I can assure you that the Honorable Tesla and the Fantastic Miss Frida are here, but on separate parts of the Central Orlando, or Florida, Central Florida, Orlando, sides of the recording studio. Because you know what? Because the Honorable Tesla is kind of like Godzilla. He can get really angry and frustrated sometimes and start barking for no reason. And the Phantasma Frida can do the same thing. Look, you know what? I kind of want to do a little Instagram reel of a big kaiju movie with them. I would love it. But Maestro, how do you feel about that?
I think that'd be absolutely hysterical, and thank you for putting me in, because I recently talked to one of our Cinemaniacs, and they told me that at the beginning of every episode, for the first like minute that you're introducing themselves, they're always holding their breath just a little bit until you pull me in, because they're always a little bit worried that I abandon you, so it's just going to be an hour of you talking to yourself. I can't necessarily say that'd be a bad thing necessarily, but I think our listeners are a little bit worried of our mental health when we're just kind of talking to ourselves in a microphone for a while. I think it's very helpful that we have the two of us bouncing off of each other. All that being said,
of course.
Hi everyone, welcome back to Cinema Gems. We are another show on the internet where a bunch of opinionated nerds talk about the stuff we love. You've kind of seen the common thread we've been following for the last, I'm going to say, year or two of anniversaries, and this one is a heck of an anniversary. It's a big one. It's massive, you might even
70.
Say. It is the size of a tall skyscraper. You might even call it a kaiju or a monster of an episode.
Yes. It is a towering behemoth of an episode.
It is a towering behemoth. It is a force of nature that is, by the way, our fault.
Not us Cinemaniacs particularly, but Americans in general.
I don't know what the viewing experience of this movie was like for Americans in the late 50s to watch this, but as an American in 2024 watching this movie, I felt overwhelming white guilt. Overwhelming. I'm sitting there thinking the whole time, oh my god, this is all our fault. Because they spell out so explicitly in this movie that Godzilla being summoned and further kaiju in the future being summoned after Godzilla is a direct cause and effect, a direct result of the bombings of Hiroshima and Nagasaki at the end of World War II.
That is unequivocally, without a doubt. It literally, this movie shows the atrocities of nuclear war, nuclear devastation.
Now, I'm positive that our fellow Cinemaniacs and Swapper Jack's friends and family, and I know this because I've talked to several of them about Miyazaki movies, in particular, Studio Ghibli movies, and a fair amount of them are also kind of definitely touch on the long-term effects of Japanese people that come from those bombings, those atrocities. And that kind of same, like, feeling really bad for these people because their lives got permanently messed up as a result of an act of war. Two massive acts of war on civilians.
Well, technically, this is, isn't this the hydrogen bomb? The H-bomb? The one that,
I believe so.
The one that was made after the atomic bomb. This is far worse than atomic. Like,
right.
Far worse. I actually watched a little documentary on Nebula, about when they first tested the hydrogen bomb about in the Bikini Atoll, and about how it affected like thousands of people, and the Americans have yet to pay anything. I think the actual, like, it was supposed to be over $2.5 million, which, by the way, that's way too low for it to be that much, but it came out to be, for everybody, they got about 25,000. And I'm like, that's it? Right. That's all the Americans decide to... Wow. The atrocities of war happen. And you're just like, you just dial out a few thousand.
Even starting in this very first Godzilla movie, the 1954 Godzilla, a.k.a. Gojira, even in this, they really spell out all of Godzilla's power set. All of the things that he and his body and the radiation stored inside are capable of are all smaller symptoms of an atomic or a hydrogen bomb and its aftermath. Godzilla boiling all of the fish and wildlife in the ocean as he swims around. His atomic breath that absolutely vaporizes and boils the air around things.
Melts things to a gelatinous thing. Like, literally melts them.
Superheats them past the point of cohesion. Are all obvious symptoms of the fallout of a nuclear bomb. Or at least a hydrogen bomb.
Correct.
This is a movie in which people who have been very deeply hurt are doing the best they can to, in a kind of lighthearted way, because it is a fictionalized giant monster, illustrate the long-term hurt of these people and how recovery is never a straight line, because new things keep popping up and getting in the way. New atrocities, new disasters mow over your progress as you're making.
You know, speaking of the electrical towers, that, you know, they were supposed to be made of steel. Did you know they were made of actually wax?
Really?
Yeah, and they put the studio lights on them for the white effect, and they melted by blowing hot air.
The practical effects in this movie, for the time, are so good. And you can see so many things that very much inspired much bigger projects later on. A lot of the scale work they do in this, you can kind of see the beginnings of what ILM would do with Star Wars much later.
Mm-hmm. So you're familiar with Akira Kurosawa, correct? Speaking of Star Wars,
absolutely. We've watched a few of his films for the podcast.
Correct. I think we did. Was it Hidden Fortress last year? And we have a.
We did Hidden Fortress.
And we have another one coming up with his this year. Don't know when in particular, but
I'm sometime. So ready.
So
ready. Whenever you wanna start recording that.
Of course. We should record it right now while we're recording Godzilla. We should double down and record both and flip back and forth. I'm just kidding. I'm not that crazy.
One extra long episode. No, we're not doing that to y'all.
His lifelong Akira Kurosawa's lifelong friend was Mr. Honda, the director of this film. They discussed.
You sure?
He discussed his films, and he imagined what would it be like if a monster appeared out of nowhere, and that's how they kind of did the whole Godzilla kind of peaks over a mountain type of thing. And also, they were like, we should do a suit, make it cool. I like this. So, you haven't seen Godzilla Minus One yet, correct? But am I sure?
I have not.
Okay. So
I've been told by several people that I absolutely need to.
Correct. Godzilla Minus One is an homage to this movie. Like, now that you've watched this movie, whenever Godzilla Minus One becomes available on streaming, watch it.
Oh, 100%.
It is amazing. It is a phenomenal movie, but it doesn't hold the weight that it does to this one. Because this one, what, is a 93% on Rotten Tomatoes? And it's like, yes, it deserves that because it set the genre for monster kaiju movies.
Absolutely.
So, and also this movie in general, the original Godzilla from 1954, I feel like it steps in a certain direction about basically the involvement of nuclear weapons and H-bombs and all type of the atrocities of war in general for onto another people that has to now live with that for the rest of their lives.
Absolutely. Like I said, long-term by the Americans. Consequences. Long-term consequences.
That, correct. After that, it kind of just becomes a giant kaiju monster fest. Which, I'm not upset.
No, at same, all. Same. And I was going to say, would you like us to kind of run through the bare bones plot of this movie? Because even if you haven't seen this particular installment in the franchise, if you've seen any Godzilla movies, or kaiju movies for that matter, including Pacific Rim, you're going to be kind of familiar with this plot. It's kind of a similar structure. Monster emerges, starts picking off small villages. Government gets involved, starts investigating this thing. A scientist is contacted about potential solution to this thing. That scientist happens to have something that could potentially be an incredibly dangerous and destructive weapon, but it's the only thing that can take out Godzilla. They use it on Godzilla. The scientist goes down with it in an attempt to destroy his destructive technology forever. And there are implications of, like, that one's gone, but there may be more. Did I kind of summarize it?
I mean, kind of in a way, but there are two scenes that I really want to talk about in particular. The boat sequence, when they're on the boat, just when they're in the harbor of Tokyo just having fun. And then we see Godzilla emerge out of the water. I'm sorry, yes. But that as a scale model?
Yeah.
Wow. Wow. It literally shows...
Yeah, they did an incredible job with practical effects of showing the
correct.
Scale.
Correct. It shows how tall he is and how much that Godzilla can stand up compared to being in water and attacking a boat. And the other sequence I want to talk about
right.
is that this... is the best inclination of show, don't tell. When, oh, what's her name? The character's name, the gentleman with the eye patch, the one who created the
scientist.
The doc.
Serizawa.
Serizawa. Dr. Serizawa, when he was telling Emiko, when he was basically showing, hey, I'm going to show you what this can do, doesn't show us. And then later on when she's talking to her boyfriend, Akira, she basically describes what happened. But us as an audience sees it all unfold on the screen. That was amazing. That was beautiful.
Oh, yeah.
I know it's destruction.
There is some incredible filmmaking in this first movie.
I know it's destruction and horridness, but it needed to be shown and not told. And that's what I like about these old films. And all the way, are you aware that the Guinness Book of World Records considers this to be the longest running franchise ever? It starts with this movie.
I can see that.
Yep.
I can absolutely see that.
Oh, and remember when Godzilla was in the power lines and the gentleman went and flipped the switch so Godzilla could get electrocuted?
Godzilla was in the... Ba-ba-da-da.
Yeah.
If we listen to each other's heart... Sorry.
It's okay. That was...
I just recently watched Goofy Movie again, So that song is stuck in my head.
This guy.
But yes, no, I know the moment you're thinking of when they thought, you know, we're going to stop Godzilla with this giant frame of power lines and overload them, and Godzilla just ha.
So the actor who flips the switch is the director, Mr. Honda.
Okay.
Yeah.
So he pulled a Peter Jackson before Peter Jackson ever did it himself.
Yeah. So Peter Jackson stole from the East, like the West usually does. Great job. I mean, is there anything else that you want to talk about before we just kind of dive into like some of the scenes, because all the sequences with Godzilla with the boat and the water and the bridges, I'm like, I'm sorry, I love practical effects, and I know people are like, oh, but it's just a guy in a suit. I'm sorry. If you give me a giant Godzilla suit, I'm going to attack and destroy everything.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Before we kind of start shouting out different scenes and different parts, I do want to shout out the composer for this movie. And I look, y'all bear with. This is another installment of The Admiral and Butt Maestro are both super white.
Yep.
We're going to do our best to pronounce these very non-white names respectfully. So respectfully, Akira Ifukube, I believe is how you pronounce that, did the music for this movie, and I believe also did the music for several more Godzilla movies to come. And oh my god, yeah. Godzilla, Rodan, Varan, Killer Whale, King Kong vs. Godzilla. He was essential to the franchise going forward, and his music has both maintained the integrity of its own thematic work while also evolving over time. This composer, he's up there with Joe, I am blanking on his name, but the composer who always composes for Studio Ghibli.
Oh,
do you know who I'm talking about,
Admiral? I am familiar. Let me Google.
Oh god, the Cinemaniacs are gonna hate me because I'm blanking on a name that I know very well. But it, I would argue, just as iconic. And his work on the scores of these movies continues on even to the more modern American adaptations of these series, of the series.
Joe Hisaishi.
Joe Hisaishi.
There you go.
Joe Hisaishi, the incredibly iconic composer who has done all of the Studio Ghibli films to this point. I would argue that he's in the same league or vice versa as Akira Ifukube. Ifukube?
I'm
trying, y'all.
I 100% agree with you. But you want to know something that's really fundamentally Americanized about this?
Oh.
So apparently in 1956, this movie was re-edited into the Americanized version titled Godzilla, King of the Monsters.
Hey.
Wow. Just, wow. Apparently a New Yorker was like, oh, that looks like a really good movie, but we should Americanize it, you know, so not to commit the atrocities of war. Wow. Show this. This should be shown for everything that is, like, this should be shown in history classes for after World War II, what happens to a country when America invades or bombs. Show it.
Right.
Show it. I don't know.
So much of the importance of Japanese cinema, especially from the POV of Americans, is showing the aftermath of huge atrocities, showing the honest, hurt aftermath of even testing, even just testing in a sea away from civilians still has serious consequences to the environment around it.
I agree with you. I know a lot of people are like, man, you're really like harping on this, but no, it needs to be shown. It's
the point of the movie.
Exactly. It's the fallout of war. So, do you want to know what the elements of dinosaurs that they used to combine to get Godzilla's final design?
Please. I thought you were going to say his final roar, but for his final design, what you got?
I can look up his roar to see, but a Tyrannosaurus Rex, an Iguanodon, and the dorsal fins of a Stegosaurus.
Okay. I can see that.
They wanted to use...
He's always been kind of a hodgepodge of the largest and most terrifying dinosaurs.
They wanted to use a stop-motion animation, but they were like, So they did the suit animation. And I believe the person who did the suit...
I believe he just passed away last year, didn't he?
Yes, I believe so. He was, I think, Nakajami is one of them, and he did Godzilla in this one, and he played Godzilla until Godzilla versus Gigan in 1972. And then there was another one. There's another gentleman named Tezuka that worked with Nakajama about that. He did the different monster suits compared to Nakajama, who did Godzilla for 12 movies.
Okay.
Yeah, 12 consecutive films. He was Godzilla. You know that this is like the stop motion, not stop motion, but the special effects with the models. That's where George Lucas got the inspiration for Star Wars.
Literally, what did I say in the beginning of this episode?
Yep.
About how all of the practical effects technology in this work, in this movie, inspired and defined so many bigger pieces of art later.
It did Western cinema. Like, it helped just mandate Western cinema in general.
100%.
So correct me if I'm wrong, but the music that they use for Godzilla's theme in this is still used in the modern Godzilla, but it's a different...
I haven't seen the most recent handful.
Okay.
Beyond the ones we've reviewed for this show.
Because I feel like it's the same.
Which I think the most recent one we've reviewed for the show is Godzilla versus Kong. And there have been a few more after that.
Yeah. Well, no, there's only been one. It's the new one.
Then, yeah. I don't know. To some extent.
Okay, cool. So they just kind of just rearrange it, the music-wise, in order to see how it goes. Or they just also implement with a new orchestra, correct? Am I making sense
to right.
what I'm saying?
Right. I believe Bear McCreary has more or less taken over the composition of this series, and he went to the Hans Zimmer School of Big Bombastic Horns and Drums.
Okay.
Which is perfect for a kaiju movie, honestly. It works really well.
Oh, and apparently John Carpenter saw this movie at 8, and it filled him with dread on the... monster destroying Tokyo, and it gave a powerful expression and ambience of disguising it as a giant monster movie. That's John Carpenter.
I mean, yeah, that'll do it.
John Carpenter. My God.
Like we said at the top, this movie was and continues to be a trendsetter and inspiration for the entire film industry going forward.
This movie that we're reviewing right now, Godzilla 1954, do you know how many sequels came out afterwards?
I don't want to know.
37.
Okay, tell me. Jesus. It's a lot of movies. It's a lot of movies to that's a lot of monsters.
That's a lot of monsters.
that's a lot of times that a giant prehistoric monster has come out of the earth during modern day and caused destruction.
Yes. Well, you know, that's what Americans do. So, you know. Sorry. Not sorry.
I mean, don't be. That's the whole point of this thing. So, unless you have a whole lot more things to point out within this movie, I think we're ready to give our gem rating on this.
Well, hold on. I really love
what you got.
The producing company Toho Studios. They are phenomenal, and I love that this movie is, I'm not gonna say the tentpole of their production company, but I feel like it may be the tentpole for it, because it sets everything up. Like, literally every other movie that they've done. Let's see when this was. Let's see. Okay, it's founded in 1932. So it probably is one of the tentpoles. The Los Angeles, blah, 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 in America. Sorry, I'm rereading over Wikipedia real quick.
All good, bud.
It looks like this one might have been... Yeah, it looks like... so they produced 13 movies in 1947. One of them was One A Wonderful Sunday, which directed by Akira Kurosawa. This is one of the main tentpoles of this movie studio in Japan, is Toho Studios.
Would you say that Toho Studios was one of the kind of predominant movie studios within Japan?
Yes. So this, basically there was an international expansion before this movie came out, and that's why there was so much push. Like, Seven Samurai was one of the first ones to be put for foreign sales, and then this was pushed into, like, this was pushed into the zeitgeist of everything else afterwards. In Toho Studios in Japan, they have a Godzilla square dedicated to this. I haven't been to Tokyo. I know Patron has, so I might have to talk to her and see if she went. But I think she was saving it to wait to go with me. Look, this movie, as we've said before, sets the trends for everything of Western culture. Everything. Like, there's a ton of stuff. So Seven Samurai came out in 1954, and then Godzilla came out afterwards, and then they had The Invisible Man, Godzilla Raids Again, Vampire Moth, The Legend of the White Serpent, Throne of Blood, which I feel is the best Akira Kurosawa movie. Yep, I said it. And then we get into... Yeah, so literally this and Seven Samurai was pushed to the forefront of being, you know, the tent poles of the Toho Studio Company.
Absolutely.
Yep. I just wanted to make sure we got that out. I have nothing else to say. Why don't you talk about the gem rating?
So, here on Cinema Gems, we have a pretty consistent, easy to remember rating system for the movies we talk about. Whole gem, amazing movie, loved it. Half gem, it was okay. No gem, waste of time, don't bother with it. Admiral, where does the original 1954 Godzilla fit on that scale for you?
It is one of the better versions of a Godzilla film.
Agreed.
Like, there are a lot that I'm like, oh, I'd watch that one. Oh, I'd watch that. This is the original, as you said, 1954. So I feel like it is at the peak forefront of the full gem.
100% agree.
Portion.
Absolutely. And everything agree. Else. It is one of the most timeless whole gem movies. Like, it is in Criterion collections. It is in everyone's lists of most iconic movies for a reason. It has stood the test of time and spawned countless... How many sequels did you
37.
Say? 37. Thank you. 37 sequels. You don't do that without being an incredibly good movie with great production value and good meaning behind it.
And it's available on on Max, right?
Correct. I watched it on Max, but you can probably also find it at your local library.
Correct. I say go check it out because, you know, a lot of people are like, oh, how should I start watching? I say watch this Godzilla 1954 and then watch Godzilla Minus One.
Okay.
Because it'll show the difference of the filmmaking techniques and also in general just... the atrocities of war.
Right.
And how we're still living with it. And look, let's be honest. We've all been that angry sometimes, like Godzilla, and wanted to destroy a bridge. We've all been that angry. I know I have.
Maybe not for those exact reasons, but sure. Yeah, I'm following, I think.
when he just throws over that bridge. I'm sorry, that was so satisfied.
I mean, I do agree with your earlier statement that if you put me in a Godzilla suit, I would be going on an uncontrollable rampage, and I would be laughing from inside the suit the whole time. Like a,
and that would be your roar? Would that be your roar?
Just cackling as I topple stuff. Literally a kid in a china shop. Or a bowl in a candy store. I forget which phrase is which.
And let me see. Okay. The original Godzilla roar was a... Okay, you might... I'm going to say these words. I don't know what this means, but you'll probably understand it.
Go for it.
So they detuned the strings of a double bass and coated it a leather glove with resin.
Right, despite the fact that reptiles do not have vocal cords.
I mean... It's also an atrocity of a nuclear, you know, that happened.
Right.
So maybe he gained vocal cords because of that. I don't know. But no, I mean, that's what I wanted to make sure that you knew about that. And by the way, apparently the internet asked this question and somebody answered it. How loud is Godzilla's roar? Are you ready for this? 174 decibels.
I don't know off the top of my head how loud that is. Is that pretty friggin' loud?
Ow! You don't know?
I mean, let me look it up. I don't even know how to keep track of how many decibels my own voice is putting out in this microphone.
So
I'll be honest, because Audacity doesn't show me all that.
So a normal conversation that we're having right now is about 60 decibels. Okay. A motorcycle engine, 95 decibels.
Okay.
Hearing that you can lose damage, like the loudness of the largest sound that you could probably hear, is above 120 decibels.
Boy.
Yeah. Yeah. So now we know why the Honorable Tesla always likes to bark at motorcycles.
Good Tesla.
Because it's really loud. Miss you, buddy. Also, another thing I want to say is the other part that made me really sad in the movie is when the woman was holding her children and go, "We'll be with your dad soon." I was like, wow. That is existential dread that I did not know that I
That's pretty
needed
rough.
To see.
That's pretty rough.
It's very rough.
But
all right, guys.
Before we head out today, I do have, because I can't forget 2 weeks in a row, I have to thank our amazing Swapper Jacks friends and family members for all of the amazing input and support y'all give us from week to week. Please send us all of your ideas for what else you want us to talk about on this show to cinemagems15@gmail.com. Please and thank you.
If you want Seven Samurai sooner than we want to put it out, let us know. We'd love to hear about it. Guys, we just got to, before we go any further, thank you to Marty and the Eric and Zerber for allowing us to be on your website, lowrainpictures.com. Also, Kevin George, thank you for letting us use your music. And guys, just make sure you're taking time for yourself before you can help others. It really helps to relax, decompress, and then circumvent your feelings into other things. Don't be like Godzilla and destroy a bridge, okay? Just, that should be on a t-shirt. Don't be like Godzilla and destroy a bridge and have Godzilla.
So is Godzilla the only thing worse than the flaming windmill?
Yeah, because Godzilla could destroy the flaming windmill.
Or you just blow it out.
I mean, he could destroy it and then be upset about it. He could literally light it more on fire. He could light the entire windmill.
I love the idea of a kaiju just very gingerly putting out a single candle with its fingertip.
So it's just, he's blowing out the windmill. Oh my
God. And just with his little claws, with the little tips of his giant claws. Anyway, sorry, I'm just going off now. I love all y'all. Thank y'all for letting us be a part of your week. Whether we are background noise while you're driving, or you seriously listen to us, or you put us on when you go to sleep. Thank you for letting us be a part of your week.
Good night, Dead Tom.
Email us and let us know what else you really want to hear us talk about.
Good night, Dead Tom. I'm so sorry, guys, that I am going to be taking away a little bit of this, what's already we talked about for Godzilla from 1954. But Maestro knows about this because I already talked to him about it, that I am going to insert a little bit of more fun facts that I forgot to mention because, you know, when two nerds get together and talk about a movie we really like, we kind of, everything goes by the wayside. So the original budget for Godzilla 1954 is 63 million yen. And the box office was 2.25 million. That is amazing. That is really good. That sets the stage for the 37 sequels that we got afterwards. Also, the runtime is about 96 minutes, so a solid hour and 36 minutes. And also, guys, the original release date was November 3rd, 1954. And also another couple of things that I thought about that I found out later, doing a little bit of research, that the suit itself was made with some kind of viscous concrete after, and sometimes it would get really hot in there, like overwhelmingly hot, that the Sir Nakajami, that is the accredited actor for playing Godzilla in the suit, he's also done a few other roles. He was in Seven Samurai. Hopefully we review that this year. But also, the suit itself was made out of ready-mixed concrete. And it was very hard, very porous, and also, you know, very heavy to walk around in. Nakajami actually decided to go and study animals, like elephants, on how they walked so he could get the walk down for Godzilla. He is an accredited suit actor. Unfortunately, he passed away in 2017. And also, like we said earlier, before, I don't know, I've listened to the entire podcast and edited this in 37 films. Yeah, that's a lot. No, I highly suggest, please watch this movie. Thanks, guys. See you later. And of course, as always, guys, yes, Columbo is on in the background. Guys, just remember to take some time for yourself before you can help others. There's a lot of life is going on. There's existential dread in living in this world. I guess it's the best description we could say. And also, guys, just remember that we want peace and accountability in the Middle East.
Please and thank you.
And also, guys, just remember to wipe your hooves and see you later. But remember, Black Lives Always Matter, guys.
Always.
Bye, guys. Love y'all. See you later.
Kaiju roar.
Wow, that was a really great Godzilla roar.